you guys. Time once again for Tomes of Terror, where I discuss the latest horror book that I've read over the past week. The one we're talking about today is one that had kind of a lot of buzz when it first came out. I believe it first was published back in 2017. This little sort of a haunted house novel called Kill Creek by Scott Thomas. Now, interestingly, I believe this is Scott Thomas's first novel. He actually got his start doing a lot of writing for TV, and weirdly, a lot of it was like children's TV. Like, he did some stuff for the Cartoon Network, and he did a lot of stuff for the Disney Channel. He even did some stuff, I think he did sort of like a horror theme show that was kind of, you know, YA, that was based on like R.L. Stein stories. I haven't seen it. But I think he got like an Emmy nomination for that. So he kind of got started out like writing for kids TV. He did some shit for like VH1 and MTV and stuff like that too. But I guess so this is his first horror novel, and it was published in 2017 through Inkshares. And I have to say, like, for a first horror novel, this was pretty amazing. I had a really, really good time with this book. It was never boring. It never lagged. It is a haunted house story, and, you know, of a sort. And it's not super original. It has, like, a lot of shades of, you know, The Shining and things of that nature in it. But that said, I mean, this was a really interesting story that went in a lot of directions that I didn't expect. So for that reason alone, and also the character work, even though the characters, I have to say, like in maybe in the first portion of the book, kind of started out as very sort of stereotypical or, you know, archetype type characters. But I think that as the story went on, they kind of became more complex, and you know, they each had their own like unique character arc, which I thought was very well done. So as I usually say for these discussions, I'm not necessarily going to spoil the ending or spoil any big huge plot twists or anything like that. However, it is very difficult to talk about a book like this without spoiling at least some things about it. So if you want to come at this book without knowing anything about where it's going, then I would recommend you read it first and then come back and discuss it. Because like I said, I like to approach books without, you know, knowing as little as possible about them. You know, I know a lot of other people like to do that too, because I like to be surprised and, you know, I like to see where the author is going to take me, like on the journey or whatever. So here's the setup of this book. Now, our main character, it's kind of an ensemble piece. There's like a lot of characters in it. Many of which are horror writers, but sort of the main character, the everyman type character that we're seeing most things, you know, unfold through, is named Sam McGarver. Now, he's kind of like your sort of standard mainstream horror writer in the sense that he's been very successful. He writes horror novels that are scary enough to appeal to horror fans, but also not so scary as like to turn off mainstream audiences. So he's kind of, I guess you could say he's kind of like a Stephen King type of guy, like, but he's like a bit younger. Now, at the beginning of the story, though, even though he's been quite successful so far, he's kind of hit a bit of a slump. Him and his wife have just broken up. Like, his wife has left him. They're separated. And he has not been able to get into his next book. Like, his agent is sitting there saying, you know, we need a new book from you this year, like by the end of this year. And he's like, yeah, yeah, I'm working on it. But he's really not. He really doesn't have two ideas to rub together. And he just keeps lying and saying that he's working on something, but he's really not. So he's having kind of a hard time. Also, he has something of a sort of dark traumatic past, which is kind of given away in little hints here and there. You know that something bad happened to him when he was a child that had to do with, you know, a house fire and other things. And he has like scars on his arm or whatever, but they don't tell you exactly what happens until probably like the end, even though you can probably like figure it out. So what ends up happening with Sam is that he gets contacted by this dude named Wainwright. Now, Wainwright is sort of like this young hotshot type internet tycoon type of guy. I guess he's kind of like in his 30s or whatever, and he's real stylish. And his dad is a billionaire, I think. And so he's pretty much has all the money he needs to indulge in his various proclivities. Now, Wainwright is really, really into horror, and he's specifically interested, one, in getting more mainstream audiences interested in horror. And also, he likes to take things that are sort of obscure and kind of bring them back into the, like, things that are forgotten or something like that that have to do with horror, you know, like creepy old haunted houses or whatever. So he's very much into that. And because he has a lot of money, he has started this website on which they do sort of these horror-themed events. And he tries to do something different all the time. So Wainwright contacts Sam McGarver, Sam being a very popular horror writer, and he has a proposal for him. He's basically like, well, Halloween is coming up and we want to do this really big event, and we want to interview you at this supposedly haunted house that a lot of people have kind of forgotten about, which was kind of like, you know, there were urban legends about it like back in the day, but it's sort of gone under the radar since then, like since the 70s, I believe. And he's like, so I want to kind of bring this house back to the light. And I also want, you know, you to be able to get out there and say what you want about horror and stuff. And he's like, and I'll give you $100,000. So at first, Sam is like real reluctant. He thinks that he doesn't really trust this guy. He thinks, you know, there's something underhanded. He's not entirely sure what he's like. He's kind of familiar with the website. And he's like, I know how much he likes to do these type of stunts, these type of like events, because they want all these people to watch it. So he's real kind of reluctant to get on board with it. However, on the other hand, it is $100,000, which is nothing to sneeze at. And also, he's like, well, maybe staying in this house, because it's in Kansas, the same state that he is in, and he had actually heard the stories about it when he was a kid. He's like, you know, maybe that will kind of kickstart an idea for my next novel, because, you know, I don't have any ideas for it at this point. So maybe it'll be okay. So he finally agrees to do it. Now, what Wainwright doesn't tell him, though, but what he finds out later on, is that Sam is not the only horror writer that Wainwright has asked to participate in this project. So Sam, being kind of the representation of the mainstream successful horror writer, like I said, like a Stephen King type character, he's that guy, the everyman. You also have three other horror writers who are summoned to this meeting with Wainwright, where he kind of gets into, you know, what he wants this event to be. Now, one of the other writers is a female horror author named T.C. Moore. And she's sort of supposed to be like, I guess I kind of saw her as sort of like early Clive Barker, or maybe like Krista Faust or somebody like that, who writes about really, really extreme horror, gore, fetishism, eroticism, you know, just like a lot of BDSM, a lot of, you know, demon fucking, that type of stuff. So she does like real extreme sexual horror. She's also she's a little bit, I feel like her character was kind of one of the most divisive of the book, at least according to a lot of the reviews that I read. And I can see why. She's a little bit over the top, a little bit like a caricature. She's very much, you know, she's a very thin, like a very gothy sort of character. I think in the first scene, I think it's the first scene where she's introduced, she's basically like at this meeting in LA where she lives, with her, with these producers that are making a movie out of her latest book. And she's really pissed off because they want to make it PG-13, even though the book is like really, really extreme and she's not having it. So basically in the middle of a crowded restaurant, like in the middle of an afternoon, like she stabs one of the dudes in the hand and all this other. So she's very like over the top, angry. You know, she's just very sarcastic. She's very mean. So you can say like, she's kind of unlikable. I kind of dug her, but, you know what I mean? But I can see how some people are like, yeah, it's a little much. She does actually soften as the book goes on, as her character becomes more developed, as more bad shit happens. So, and she does have some shit that happened to her in her past that explains like why she's so, you know, misanthropic, I guess, because she is like just really rude and terrible like to everybody. So she's one of the writers too. She's kind of like the representation of extreme horror. And then you have this guy named Daniel Slaughter, who is, I guess he's sort of like the R.L. Stein stand-in. He writes YA horror, like for tweens and teenagers, but with a real over-the-top, hardcore Christian outlook. It's kind of like one of those, it kind of reminded me a little bit of like a Chick Tract, where it's like their horrible shit happens in the book, but it's all in the, you know, in the service of getting people, it's like, oh, evil is always punished, you know what I mean? So he kind of writes these sort of simplistic, you know, allegorical type religious things, but in a horror context. His personality also kind of reflects that. Like, he's very golly gee willikers, you know, he's very hardcore. He goes to church all the time. He doesn't swear. He doesn't drink. He doesn't do all this kind of stuff. He's a nice enough character, but he does seem like a little too good to be true, I guess. And then the fourth writer is an older guy. He's in his 70s, and his name is Sebastian Cole. And he kind of comes across as sort of the grandfatherly, like, mentor type character, because all of the other younger writers know who he is, and they really, like, look up to him because his, you know, books have been very lauded and everything. He kind of gave me, like, a Ray Bradbury type of vibe or somebody like that. And he's just, like, this very sweet, very elegant old man. You know, he's very compassionate. He's very, you know, he's just a lovely, lovely person. He is actually, in particular, even though all the writers know who he is, like, Sam is really, like, flabbergasted to meet him, because he's like, you know, not only is Sebastian Cole the reason that I became a horror writer, but he also kind of saved my life, because he had, like, a really fucked up childhood, and he's like, and discovering his books was, like, his way out, you know what I mean? So these four writers all gather at this meeting with Wainwright. And Wainwright lays it out to them. He's like, look, I'm giving you each of you $100,000. We're going to go to this haunted house called Kill Creek. It's in Kansas. The reason the house is called Kill Creek is just because, obviously, there was a creek next to it that was called Kill Creek. They kind of go into maybe why it was called that. I guess because, like, the Dutch word for creek kind of sounds like kill or whatever. And it just maybe got, you know, named that. And they go a little bit into the history of the house. They don't over explain it, which is actually good. They kind of leave it a little bit nebulous, but it's like, it was, you know, built during, you know, maybe a little bit before, during the Civil War. This guy built it pretty much with his own hands. And he was a white dude, but he had a black girlfriend who was a freed slave. And not too long after the house was finished, there was a group of, you know, people, like Confederate soldiers or whoever, and they came and lynched his girlfriend and killed him. And from then on, like, there were other kind of stories about the house. So they go a little bit too into, you know, some other tragedies that happened at the house. Like I said, they don't belabor it, which is good. Probably the most important characters, you know, of the people that lived there before were these two sisters, Rachel and Rebecca Finch. And there's kind of a story about them. You know, one of them was, you know, in a wheelchair. And then, you know, there were all these kind of weird stories about them. And I think they died in the 70s, and they kind of left the house the way it was. And they left in their will that the house needed to be left the way it was. Like, don't change anything in it. Like, so all the furniture is still there. So basically, Wainwright's proposal is, he's like, look, I got this book that came out in the 70s, I believe. It was by a parapsychologist. And he had stayed at this house, and he talked about meeting Rachel Finch when she was still alive. And he talked about all this creepy shit that had happened in the house. And Wainwright is very excited by this book, because he's like, this book is out of print now. And it's like, I feel like a lot of people have forgotten about this house, even though at one time it was very, very famous. So he's like, this is exactly the type of thing I want to do. He's like, I want to bring this previously, you know, well-known legendary haunted house back to the public, since it seems everyone has kind of forgotten about it. And he's like, and while we're doing that, we're also going to promote you for horror authors, and we're going to do it all. It's a big stunt. We're going to do it for Halloween. We're going to live stream it, and we're going to, like, you know, record everything that happens in the house. Maybe some creepy shit will happen in there. And, you know, it'll be win-win for everybody. So, as I said, even though some of the writers are reluctant, T.C. Moore probably more than anybody, because she's just real cranky altogether, but finally they all agree to do it. Now, the interesting thing about this book, and why I said that this kind of goes in directions that you might not expect, or at least that I didn't expect, because what ends up happening is that all of them go to the house at Kill Creek. And they're only going to stay there for essentially just like a day, and then they're going to stay overnight, and then they're going to leave like the next morning. So it's not like they're going to stay there for, you know, several days or anything. It was just like overnight. And so they all go there, and, you know, they have a generator. And so, you know, they've had the water turned on. The house is actually, even though it's been abandoned for quite a while, it looks like it's in decent condition, like better condition than you would expect. And they make a lot about how the guy that built it back in the 1800s, it's like he pretty much built the whole thing by himself, and it's like really, really beautiful, and it's really stood the test of time, like all the carving, all the details and everything. And it's actually like a really lovely house. So they're there, and they go through and they do, you know, they do the event, they do the interview, they talk about horror, the, you know, it's a live stream, there's millions of people watching. And a couple of creepy things kind of happen, like Kate, who is Wainwright's girlfriend and is also there as she's like the technical person. So she's like videotaping everybody and like, you know, controlling the live stream and everything. Now she thinks that she sees something. There's like a, it's a three-story house, and there's a staircase that goes up to the third floor, where at the top of the staircase there's just brick. So obviously something's been bricked over, and they can't figure out, they're trying to figure out this whole time, like, was somebody bricked in there, or, you know, was it bricked up just so nobody, to keep people out or keep people in or whatever. So they kind of think that it had something to do with the Finch sisters, but they're not entirely sure. So she thinks she sees a figure up there, but she's not entirely sure. So, as I said, it's very strange because the first half of the book is basically like you're following the four characters. Like I said, Sam is kind of like the main character. He's like the everyman Stephen King type of guy. But then it kind of jumps back and forth to the other characters as well. So you kind of get to know them because, you know, because they all live like in vastly different cities. Like at least Sebastian lives like in Ithaca, New York, and, you know, T.C. Moore lives out in L.A., whatever. So they kind of like follow their lives and their motivations a little bit. So then the first half of the book is just kind of the buildup. So, you know, their characters, and then they actually come to the house. A couple creepy things happen. They do the interview. It's very successful. Millions of people watch it. And then they sleep in the house. Kind of some weird shit happens, like they have like weird dreams or whatever, and, you know, they kind of lose track of reality a little bit. But then, you know, the next morning comes and they leave. Now at this point I'm reading it, I'm like, so it seemed, it was weird because it seemed like a little anticlimactic, because I'm sitting there going, this book is only halfway through, and they went to the house and a couple creepy things happened, but nothing all that exciting happened, like nothing all that spooky happened, and then they're just leaving like nothing happened. You know, it's like, okay, well, that was over. And so I said, so where are we going to go from here? Now, interestingly, what happens after that is that the book then goes into all of the writers, you know, go back to their respective homes or whatever. And then something very interesting starts to happen. Over the following 6 months, all four of the writers that were in the house, they start feeling compelled to write a new novel, and it's going to be the best novel that they ever wrote. Now, they are so compelled to write this novel that they pretty much like forget to eat for days at a time, forget to sleep or shower for days at a time. They don't clean up their houses. So they basically kind of just go spiraling down the drain because all they're doing is writing, because they're just so compelled to get this story out. Now, it's very interesting because during this time period in the book, we're following Sam, and he is just writing and writing and writing. And the book is, they're just describing like his house is just like a fucking disaster area because he's just like not cleaning anything up. He smells bad because he's not showering, because all he wants to do is write all the time. There's just stacks of pages. He's written like 1,000 pages or something like that. And it's almost like he can't stop, because whenever he stops writing the story, he starts being haunted by the shit that happened to him when he was a kid. So he starts seeing this apparition that, you know, brings back a terrible traumatic event from his childhood. And the only way to make that go away and stop appearing in his house is if he just keeps writing. Now, at first, he thinks he's going crazy, but then his agent comes to the house and has been like, hey, I've been trying to call you. You're not answering your phone. You're not answering your emails. What the fuck is the matter with you? You look like shit. You know, you've lost weight. You haven't shaved. You haven't showered. You know, no one can get a hold of you. And he's like, yeah, I'm working on a new book. And it's like super, super long. So the agent says to him, it's like, you know, I was talking to T.C. Moore's agent, because obviously his agent knows about the stunt that they did with Wainwright, like on Halloween at the Kill Creek house. He's like, I was talking to T.C. Moore's agent, and no one can get hold of her ass either. So we think that there's something weird going on. Maybe you should contact her and see what's going on. So he actually does end up contacting her, he flies out to her house, actually, like climbs over her fence and whatnot. And it turns out that T.C. Moore has been experiencing the exact same thing. She has been compelled to write a novel. She has been neglecting personal hygiene. She hasn't been answering her phone. She just needs to write and write and write all the time. And she is also seeing an apparition in her house that only goes away when she writes, but is a different apparition than what Sam is seeing because it's more personalized to her, like a trauma that she had in her past. So Sam is kind of relieved because he's like, well, this means I'm not crazy because the same exact thing is happening to her. But then in a way, he's like, well, this isn't good either because this means that whatever it was that was in the house at Kill Creek followed us home and is somehow manifesting as basically our worst nightmare or our worst trauma, you know, writ large or whatever. So they kind of talk and they determine that the novel that they've been writing, that they've been so compelled to write that it's like thousands and thousands of pages, is essentially, they've written essentially the same novel. They're not exactly the same. Like the character names are different. The setting is different, but the plot of it is pretty much exactly the same. And it's based on the Kill Creek house. Once they determine that, they're like, okay, well, we have to figure out what the fuck is going on with the other two writers, see if the same thing is going on with them, and maybe we can meet with them and we can figure out what the hell is going on. So from that point, that's what they do. They fly out to Ithaca, New York. They find Sebastian Cole. They fly out. They find Daniel at his home. And it turns out that all of the writers are experiencing the exact same thing. They also have to go and see the original parapsychologist who wrote the book about the Kill Creek house that got Wainwright interested in the whole thing. And so at this point, they all figure out what's going on, and then they decide that they have to go back to the Kill Creek house to find out how they can stop whatever this force is that is pretty much ruining their lives. So that's essentially how the story goes. I mean, they end up having, like, all these people, you know, people die, terrible things happen. I forgot to mention, too, that right before the end of the first part, like before they leave the Kill Creek house for the first time, like after the interview, that something really bad happens, not to do with the paranormal or the supernatural, but something really bad happens to one of the characters or to one of their family members, I guess. And that kind of feeds into some stuff that happens later on. So they kind of all get back together. And, you know, Wainwright goes with them and they decide they're going to go back to Kill Creek. And one of the first things they want to do is knock down that brick wall because they've had like dreams about it and stuff. And they want to see like what's behind there. Maybe they can figure out what this entity is that's causing this haunting, essentially, that is apparently powerful enough to follow them home, you know, in the disparate cities where they live. So they want to figure out what the secret of this house is, and that's essentially what they do. One great thing about this book, it just seems like the description of it's amazing that this is kind of his first horror novel. Like I said, I know he'd written other things, you know, for TV and whatnot, but this being his first horror novel, it's actually very cinematic. It seems like it would be like a really good movie because just the descriptions and stuff are so vivid. Like I really could see it like running like a movie, like inside my head while I was reading it. As I said, the characters at the beginning, other than Sam, who's just like a very likable, he's a little bit haunted by his past. He's, you know, having some hard luck and stuff. So you kind of like relate to him right away. He's a very everyman type character. So he's very likable at the beginning. The other ones are a little bit, well, Sebastian is a good character, too, but the other two, Daniel, who's like the Christian writer, and T.C. Moore, who's like the extreme, you know, sex horror writer, a little bit over the top, like a little bit caricature-ish, but they actually like unravel more layers to their character, like unpeeled as the story goes on, which I thought was really good. Some people, I saw a lot of people, I read some of the reviews of it on Goodreads. Most of them are, you know, overwhelmingly positive because this is a very entertaining, you know, it's got some creepy imagery in it, and it seemed like a real page turner. Like, I didn't really have any point where I was just kind of like, oh, get on with it, or that I was bored or anything. I thought the pacing of it was very good. But one of the main complaints, like, a lot of people really didn't like the character of T.C. Moore, and also they didn't like, they said, well, I get this. This does have slightly a little bit of that problem that I think I talked about when I was talking about that Richard Layman book that I reviewed a little while back. It has a little bit of that male writer writing a female character and kind of over-sexualizing her. And it's not just the one female character, it's the other, you know, the other female character, Kate. She's at pretty much every time they are talked about, it's they talk about their body, you know what I mean? Which I get that, like, a lot of male writers do that when they're writing female characters. It's like, it didn't bother me that much, I guess, because I'm kind of used to it. But some people that were on Goodreads that, you know, they really, really didn't like it. Particularly the character of T.C. Moore. It's like pretty much every single time that she's, you know, on the on screen or she's on scene or whatever, it's like he's talking about what her body looks like. And it does get, it is a little strange because they don't really do that for the male characters, except for Daniel Slaughter, who he's like the Christian writer and he's real, he's a big fat dude. So there is, so every time that he's on screen, they talk about how fat he is. Now, I will say that him being really overweight does actually kind of matter to the story later on, but like not till the end. But at the beginning, it's like some people were just kind of like, man, every time this dude is on there, he's like, hey, fat this, fat that, like, you know, the floorboards creaking underneath him and all this other kind of stuff. It's like, he's fat. We get it. But you know what I mean? So there's a little bit of that. But like I said, it didn't really bother me. The story was compelling. The characters, like I said, even though they seemed a little stereotypical at the beginning, they actually got a lot more complex and interesting and, you know, more like real people as the story went along and as more terrible shit happened. So if you're kind of going through the first half of the book and you're just like, man, these characters, they don't seem like real people, or just like stick with it because it does actually, they do actually seem more and more real as the story goes on. And like I said, particularly in the case of the T.C. Moore character, she's real prickly and real, she's kind of an asshole, but there's a reason that she's like that, you know what I mean? And there's a reason that all of them are like that. So you can kind of forgive it to an extent. But yeah, like I said, this was a really entertaining book. It took me, it's pretty long, but it really didn't take me, took me maybe a day and a half to finish it. Because it was just, I just kept getting, you know, compelled to go back to it because particularly when I got past the halfway point and they, you know, went and did the interview and then they left the house and apparently nothing bad happened. I was just kind of like, huh, and then I was like kind of curious as to like where it was going to go. So it went in a lot of directions I didn't expect. Also has a little bit, well, I don't even know if a little bit, a lot, a twist ending. And I didn't see it coming. So I liked that the end was sort of like a gut punch, like right at the very end. I was like, oh, shit. You know what I mean? So I didn't see it coming. Maybe some people will. I don't know. I didn't. So I really liked that as well. I honestly think this would actually probably make a really, really good movie. If they ever want to make it into a movie, like I said, I kind of saw it as a movie in my head while I was reading it. Because it just has a very visual, very cinematic kind of style to it. But yeah, and I would totally watch it. Now, as I said, it's not a hugely, it's a haunted house story. You know, it's a story about the power of storytelling in a lot of ways, how stories about things can become more important than what is actually true. Or, you know, if you tell a story enough times or, you know, tell a rumor enough times, like it eventually becomes true or that's what gives it power. Because that's kind of how the house gets its power from its notoriety. It's sort of like the house is almost kind of like, or the entities within are like a living organism that feed off of attention and they feed off of people's pain and fear. So the house or the entities within it are basically just trying to draw people to it so that people will tell stories about it and it will just like make it stronger and stronger. So it's kind of like The Shining in that way, where it's like, you know, a building that is feeding off of people's fears, essentially. So that's kind of where this story is coming from. So like I said, it's not, you know, the most original idea in the world, but shit, man, what is? Nothing. It's everything's been written. But it's, I just really, really enjoyed this a lot. Just a real fun cinematic read, had some real creepy imagery in it. Characters that started out kind of like, not, I don't want to say cardboard cutout, but started out a little bit stereotypical, but got more complex and interesting, like as the story went on. But yeah, and it just had some twists and turns that I didn't see coming. So, you know, I just had a really, really good time with this book and kind of amazing that it's this first horror novel. I don't know if he's written any since then, but I guess I'll be on the lookout for his next one if he does another one. But yeah, totally check it out. Like I said, came out in 2017, Kill Creek by Scott Thomas. So check it out if it sounds at all interesting to you, and I will see you on the next one. Bye.